Obi Ugoma is a Nigerian actor, stand-up comedian, and writer. He's actively practiced these three crafts professionally since 2007. His body of works include sitcoms like Extended Family, The Obi Ugoma Show, Back to School, Banana Republic, as well as Visa on Arrival. He has also written and starred in feature films, My Village People, It's Her Day, and the yet-to-be-released Life and Death. His stand-up comedy career has seen him entertain mostly African audiences in major cities of the world, from Lagos and Accra to Vancouver, Melbourne, Paris, London, Atlanta, Moscow, and Kiev, among several others. And he's married with three children. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our next speaker, Obi Ugoma.
Please sit down. How far now? Hey. Voila. Okay. First of all, let me ask us, because this is actually coming from my heart. Mona putting her hands together for Miss Folake that just spoke. Mona, clap for her again. There are certain areas of her story that are quite similar with mine, right? So you touched me in ways that I've not been touched in a long time. Yeah. Yes. When you talked about your mom too and the closeness to your mom, that was the kind of relationship I shared with my mom as well, you know? And I also tragically lost her. But you enjoy your mom because your mom got to 60. Mine was 58. So you have 2 years advantage. Now, I'm feeling like because you made us pay respect to your mom and all her loved ones, your mom, a mom for heaven now go to the field. Give mama say, see my daughter. So if I not do for mama, mama feel bad, you know. So I wanna clap for mama there. Thank you. Thank you. I've not done this type before on this scale, you know. I'm used to just performing, right? But I have a few, but this size, so people should manage me. I told Pastor Sam, you see, I came with my notebook and everything. Pastor Sam said, don't worry. Yeah, is it not me? That anything I forget, I should just crack joke. In my mind, I say, Pastor Sam, none of the kind jokes. What? May God not go strike me. Yeah. So, I'll behave. And in case I'm loose guarding, once soon I just shout, hey. I will stop, okay? All right. Mind shift. I've always been fascinated about how the mind works, right? So this area I delved into today, what the things I'm going to talk about, I'm very happy I chose this area because I wanted to talk about us as individuals and what we're capable of. But luckily for us, Ms. Folake spoke in that regard, right? So me, I'm going to tell us some stories. Let me start with some stories because, like I said, I've been fascinated about how the mind works. And the more I delved into this topic, the more I realized that 45 minutes cannot deal with the topic. One whole day cannot deal with the topic. 1 year cannot deal with the topic. You know why? The mind is designed to just be thinking and shifting. One is we cannot exhaust this topic as a matter of fact. But you see, like I said, from a very young age, I've been fascinated about the mind and how it works. When I was 17, story number one. When I was 17 years, my mom took me to a revival service. It was the third year in a row we were going for that service. After the service, I told my mom that there's a prayer they prayed that I'm never going to pray again. She said, which prayer is that? I said, they say we should pray to break the chain of generational curses. She said, eh. I said, yes. I prayed it when I was 15. Prayed it when I was 16. This year now I'm 17. I'm praying it again. She said, why? Why will I not pray it again? I said, because, except say God, not a year. I don't see why I should repeat the prayer after 3 years. Break the chain of generational curses. Is it that when we don't pray, break and for night, devil go carry welder, come weld the chain, join again. So I told her, no more. I'm not praying it again. I just turned 44. I haven't prayed it since I was 17 again, because I believed completely, you know, and shifted from that thought process. When I moved to Lagos, sometime around 2004, I just stayed with my uncle, the Jaye. So my mom came to visit, and we were driving past Kudirat Abiola Way, and she saw Daystar Christian Center. She said, which kind of church is this? Which kind of name is Daystar? This is all this church, they will just be playing in the church. You will know it's play and groove that is in their mind. So in my mind, I just registered, say, ah, church, the way that they play, we go. I say, I did go that church. You know? Because my mom was a staunch Anglican, you know? Staunch one. So, that's how I go to the church to go play. You know, attended a few programs. But before you know, I started loving what I was seeing. So the next day, okay, clap. So the next time I visited, my mom visited Lagos, I told her that, that church that they play, that's where I'm playing now. She was like, serious? I said, yes, you will love it. Just come. She came. We sat here, me and her, front row. After the service, she was squeezing her face. I said, what's the problem? She said, what kind of short service is that? It's very short. And there's no cross in the church anywhere. I said, hey, but Jesus, not did the cross again now. I'll be mommy. She was like, I beg, it's too short. And they did not pray. They didn't pray. They didn't kabash for long. I say, mommy, actually, that you see the senior pastor, you say, yes. I say, the wife, she didn't come up today, but now she did usually kabash on a normal, you know. She was like, hey, I say, yes. So what did I do? After every service, then we used to line up to buy the CDs, right? So I would buy them and send to my mom. And gradually, one day she just came. She was like, I hope you are still going to that church. I hope you are there. I said, yes. She said, then I hope you need a spiritual father in the church. I said, you won't take her to the level one or plan. She said, no. Little did I know, the next service she attended, she marked faces. Then when I had my baby's naming ceremony, Pastor Godwin was the one who came for me. I spoke to him and he said, sure, why not? So she took him to a corner and said, please, I need you to be his spiritual father. So Pastor Godwin called me, call me like spiritual father. And Pastor Godwin, not too senior me. My spiritual guy man. You know? So, you know? Now, let me rewind a bit. This is actually the third story. when I was going to get married to my wife was Catholic, my family is Catholic. They told me, I went with my brother, they told us that, listen, she's Catholic, you will never take her away from Catholic. We said, okay. Then I said, why did we rush to answer like that? Are you sure? We said, no, we mean it. My brother said, Shebi is God, they worship there. He said, yes, and we too is God. So anywhere is fine by us, you know? So we got married in the Catholic church and everything. The first Christmas together, my wife said, we must go to Catholic church for that Christmas service. I said, no problem. But after that, you need to come to my own church to come and see for yourself. She's like, no, it's Pentecostal church. All their things, it's too dramatic, everything. She went for one. When the pastor was coming up, the church was hailing. I say, fine. I say, you see this guy in this church? He not like hailing. I say, even when he wants to come up, they deceive us that now bow your head so that the word of God will enter. Ingo can't dodge the entire stage. You didn't see, and they literally they dodge that. Am I lying? So I told my wife, just come and see for yourself. You will like it. And she came, and by the special grace of God, she can't even go to church past me, self. She loved what she saw, right? Now, why did I tell us these stories? It's because they are some of my triumphs when it comes to convincing people to change their minds. You know? I just showed them the ways. But there are areas I also failed as well. When I started dating my wife into our early years in marriage, one common thing used to happen. My wife and her sister, anytime they clash, I would sit them down. I would ask my wife what happened. She would tell her version. I would ask her sister. Sister would tell her version. And believe you me, it is two different versions entirely. So I used to say one person is lying or one person is mad. You don't understand. When I say two different versions, they are sitting. So this one is talking. This one say, hey, when? Then when this one talks, this one will be like, hey, when? And that was the light bulb in my head of perspective. So sometimes when some people seems like they are lying, it can be psychological, it can be trauma. But I realized that the mind locks like a missile. Once it is locked, there's nothing you want to tell that person. You know, the mind is tender. It can grab information, but when it chooses what it wants, it locks. So that's what I realized. And I started to talk to them, try to make them understand that life is not like that. Now, if as individuals our minds lock like that, it also means that when a group of people think in a certain way, that is what gives birth to culture. You agree, right? Once you share the same values, the same mind, the thought process and everything, that's what gives birth to culture. So, why should culture change? Like I said, the mind is always thinking. It's an endless topic, right? As human beings, you will realize that from the day you were born till now, there are things you have done differently as an individual. Even though it's the same in some process, some things you just change because you get bored. Man was created to create. Man was created to move. Man was created to change. So when we say to break certain cultural barriers, it's very necessary because nothing stays the same forever. Nothing. And there are certain things that if we don't change them for the better, they will change for the worse. Because nothing stays the same. In fact, I have searched my brain to find out that since I was younger, now I'm getting old, what has stayed the same? The only thing I know is St. Louis Sugar. Am I lying? The packets, the size, the color, the logo, everything about it is the same. Apart from that, every other thing changes. So there are certain cultural practices that are bad. Over time, they have changed. You know, time was when in certain places, they used to kill twins. Once you're born like this, now two. Ha, ha, pia, pia. Right? Before I continue, you will agree with me that Nigeria is such a plural nation. We have maybe over 250 different cultures because we have different languages. You agree, right? So there are certain cultural values I share that many of you here don't share or practice or agree with. So yes, there used to be killing of twins. It changed. In certain cultures, if a husband dies, the widow is locked in a room with the corpse, her hair shaved, the water they use in bathing that dead body, she's made to drink it. You didn't know? These are some cultural practices in certain places. All those things over time have changed. That's the good news. Should I tell you the bad news? Many of those things that have changed have reinvented themselves and still exist. Mary Slessor is credited with stopping the killing of twins 138 years ago. That's 1885. It was in 19th century, not even the 20th century. You understand? We're in the 21st century. 1885, 138 years ago. Barbaric act, killing of twins. The moment they are born, they kill them. In 2023, this year, as recent as last month, people have been killed because they were accused of vanishing people's private parts. On another year. 2023. People have died. It's in the news. The one I saw day before yesterday, now they've entered female gender. One girl raised alarm, say they vanish her. Are you seeing the kind of things people are thinking about? We live in a country where if they shout at somebody, thief, 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 ordinary, normal citizens will gather that person, and if he's not lucky, they will beat him to death and they will go home and sleep. Are you seeing the kind of thought process? So some of these things have come back. So I started to think, what could be responsible for some of these practices? Number one, lack of information. Information is knowledge. Lack of information, lack of knowledge. I was sitting here one day when Pastor Sam preached and said that many centuries ago, when the early man tried to cross the river in some places and he drowned, they built a bridge. In some other parts of the world, when they tried to cross the river and they drowned, they started to worship the river. You remember, say, you talk that in Abi? And where I come from, there are communities that forbid the eating of snail. But I eat snail, right? And one day, my friend just, when I told him that, you know, I have people who forbid eating this thing, it's forbidden in our place. He said, it's not a surprise. I'm like, where did that come from? He said, somebody probably had an allergic reaction maybe 200 years ago. And that fear, lack of knowledge, they just said, ah, you know what? We forbid it. You know? Number two, that is most likely responsible for these type of things is poverty. Yeah. Unfortunately, poverty plays a major role. Because a woman dies and loses virtually everything. Because they will say, oh, according to their culture, and the man's brothers have to play a role. And they will start taking the property. And she has children. Oh, she needs to shave her hair. She needs to do this, do that. You know? If a man is rich and well-to-do and his brother dies, I don't think he will be interested in his brother's property. You know? The lack of information, too, those things have changed in many places to show you that it's not really cultural or it's not a culture that should exist. Do you know till today, some women still go through some of these horrors I talked about. But the ones who don't go through it in those communities, what did their husbands do? They wrote a will and got a lawyer. Yeah. So if you come and quote tradition, they will quote law for you. And law can send you to jail. So it's simple. Lack of information, but the presence of information, the presence of that knowledge helps to refine some of these cultural beliefs, these cultural practices and all. And then poverty has a major role to play. Do you know that before, in most cultures, bride price is a symbolical thing that you drop 10 kobo, 20 naira. But now it's very commercial. It's poverty. In some communities, if you are a master's degree holder, they have your prize. If you are a PhD holder or professor, hey, you go pay. Tire. Those things, you know, these are cultures that it's poverty. That's the truth. Now, should we be custodians of our culture? Yes, but we should be for the ones that are beneficial to the people, that is making us a better people. I'm coming on. You know, before I finish this poverty talk, you know one thing I noticed? In most cultures, if you use your left hand to give people something, what will happen? That means you are rude, you're untrained, you are being disrespectful. I've never seen anybody that they gave $10,000 with left hand. And I said, no. You are using your left hand. Because it's poverty. But does it mean that if we get rid of poverty, some of these crazy practices will go away? Not exactly. I gave extreme examples, right? And I also stated clearly that we are all from different places. In this hall, there are at least 20 different tribes present here, if we take this statistic. And these tribes have their different cultures, some similar, some varying, right? But what do you think we share, irrespective of our different cultures? What is that culture that you think we share? There may be more, some positive, some negative. I've been thinking really, really deep. And I realize that if there is one thing we share, all of us, it is clandestine. It does not meet the ordinary eye. It is there, but it's just evasive. It's hidden in plain sight. It is the culture of
shame.
There are many things I'm going to talk about that I have been guilty of. Some I am still guilty of. So if stray bullet hit you, don't take it personal. The culture of shame. We practice it with ease and we don't even know. Shame and shaming. That is one thing all of us, irrespective of gender, culture, age, we all practice that culture of shame. And then I personally, you know, because I used to love history growing up. I still love history, so I read wide. I'm like, why are Nigerians the way Nigerians are? I stand to be corrected. But from everything I have studied, this is what I came up with. When a white man came and conquered us, took our forefathers into slavery, broke their spirits, used them. When slavery ended, slavery started again. They just reinvented it. They called it colonization. They were helping us, teaching us how to manage us for ourselves. During the era of slavery, the first set of people to get a grip of the English language, the white man made supervisor. They gave him shoes, they gave him khaki, they gave him a baton. He was not just interpreter, he was supervisor of his own peers. And he was a slave as well to the master. It was his master. Do you know that anything that is given to you, whether you like it or not, there comes a time you will start to give, because you cannot give what you don't have. And what you have, you were given. So the system of abuse was born that time. We started to see ourselves like, okay, because I don't want to be a slave, I'm a free man. And how was the free man that granted you your freedom behaving to you? So we started to behave like that to ourselves. When colonization came, they were helping us. And they started to do what I call triangulation. Talk to your people. They are not doing, this is what they should do, this is what they should do. So we borrowed many of their cultures, but the one they were not using as a system, they gave us, and that is shame. This thing is so broad, I wish I can really break it down. But you see, the system of shame, when the white man left, many of the people in government rushed and took over the properties in Ikoyi. So till tomorrow, Ikoyi is the most expensive place to live. I hope you are aware. It's not because there's anything special about Ikoyi. In fact, it has some of the narrowest streets. But the white man lived there. We started to judge ourselves by those standards without even knowing. It gave birth to competition amongst us instead of collaboration. That's a topic for another day, because I personally feel one thing that has aided competition is polygamy. You know? But that's maybe next year. When you tell your child or your friends about the position they carry in class, you are indirectly breeding shame, because only first mattered to us. When you say things like, see your mates, you are breeding shame. We have an affinity for anything that is foreign. Yeah. There are, because we are ashamed. There was a shirt I wore one day. One of my rich friends saw it. Ah, man, this is your shirt. We'll be the dance somewhere.
I said, man, this your shirt? I said, yeah. He's like, man, where did you get this? I said, I'm a tailor for Nigeria. He was like, oh, okay. Because it was not foreign. You know? But when he saw it, he saw the quality first too. But the moment I said, here. Now, this one I'm guilty of. There are places I've taken my proposals to for things I want to do. The difference was that I just look for one white girl. Follow body. When I go with Una, they distress us. But just add a white girl to the team. They pay attention to you. Last month, my friend said he's opening a club somewhere in Delta State. He wants to do the furnishing. I said, oh, I have people who do great jobs here. He said, I want Lebanese. I want Lebanese. I said, are you aware that these Lebanese are like us Nigerians? And the wayo you are trying to avoid, the Lebanese, they do them. The ones that do the good job, the Lebanese have their own versions of the people who do a good job. It's not about the skin color or the nationality. It's about the quality of work. And I introduced him to about three different Nigerians to find what he wanted. He was like, well, nice, nice. Yeah. But you know any Lebanese? Will you introduce to me? You understand? One other area where we practice shame without knowing is, you know, these days they say there is age shaming. Say young people, they age shame people. It's because we, the old people, caused it. You know, there is a phrase we always use when an argument gets heated up, I'm not your mate. You understand? It's born out of shame. Why do you want to bully somebody into respecting you or understanding you? It is that shame that has made every godfather quarrel with his godson / governor in Nigeria. No, not be wicked starter more. I'm not saying not be him, not be Imam Fubara starter. It don't they happen, they come from the days of Adedibu. Shame has made us crave power. And it has made us mistake power as an asset you can own. Now, still here, I sit down where Pastor Sam talk with him, just lights my head one day. He say, power is a stage. You will come, you will climb it. When you finish, you will go. It is shame that has made us hold on to titles, prefixes, no disrespect to those who earned it. But do you know today there are people who answer doctor that are not PhD holders? Yes. Everybody's looking for a prefix just to make their name have some heft in their mind. You understand? It is shame that makes us shame our women. You are single at 40, they are shaming you. You are divorced at 40, they are shaming you. You don't have a child at 40, they are shaming you. You have a child at 40, they are shaming you. You have only female children, they are shaming you. Shame now makes us hide things that naturally shouldn't be hidden. Even when COVID ravaged the world, I have friends who caught COVID and pretended and hid. Well, they were supposed to hide, but after that, they come and say, no, me, no. They cough, you say, no. Like I said, the topic is actually very broad. I can go on and on. But my point is, some of the things we do out of, you know, power to show that we have arrived is born out of shame. I'm in the entertainment business, and I can tell you, the things we see, they are very, very crazy, you know? When we do our shows, we have people who call and say, yes, I want to buy a table at your show. All right, sir. I want my table to be in front too. Okay, sir. And I also want it to be in the middle of the front. This is not the stage, oh. This is audience member. Are you understanding? You think that is pride? No. Do you realize if we get rid of our shame, the things that bother us will not even bother us anymore? Because if you know yourself, you know yourself. You understand? There was a club in VI. When the club don't fool, you know, the first place to fill up is the VIP session, and it's upstairs. So people will come and say, I have money. I want the VIP. They'll be like, sir, the VIP is full. It was happening in several clubs. So this particular club, do you know what happened? Some boys come say, hey, VIP don't fool, Abby. Let's stay down. So they stayed down and open fire. Started buying drinks. Before you know, downstairs now became VIP. Nobody they want go because they know they see them there where they open fire. Down. That's it. Do you know the 2 years I have done my show by myself, because previously it's promoters who used to do my show, last year and this year, you will not believe it that VIP tickets, this is not table now, VIP ticket, 30K, sells out before regular 5K. So I used to scream at my team, audience first. They'll be like, hey, let's add chairs in the back. I said, I want people who bought VIP, when they look at how good regular sitting is, they realize it's pretty much the same thing. So like here, we do big screen, here, big screen. Any corner where you dey, my image, they enter you as if I'm performing in front of you. Standard. So I even had friends who be like, man, Buffy, a reduced price of table. I say, forget table. Buy VIP or regular. Ah, no, no, for what? They kicked against it because of the mindset. We compete against each other. We are power drunk, but the catalyst is shame. So can we change it?
Yes.
There's good news and bad news. Which one do you want to hear first? Go to hear the bad news first. So. The bad news is that when it comes to changing it, from the age of 30, let me just put it at 30 and above, it's too late. Remember what Miss Folake, what I said about Miss Folake? You know, she talked about, she addressed individuals how to change yourself, your mindset. But as a system, we need that group mind change. It is probably too late for us as a team to change that mindset. We don't kick. So, don't get it wrong. As individuals, yes, everything I have said, take it. If you think it's correct, apply it for yourself. If you can preach it, teach it. Go ahead. But as a system, how do we effect this change? That is where the good news is. We need to attack the school system. From here. There are so many things about our system that is faulty, you know. I think legislation has a role to play. So we need to start informing those representing us that there are certain things that need to change in the school system. There are certain subjects that need to be introduced in school that should be taught from KG to uni. Love is supposed to be a subject. Love. Anything you repeat repeatedly, you become. So if we start to teach love, there's no way we will teach love and not become love. We need to teach collaboration. amongst our children. I know most schools have scrapped this position thing, right? But we also need to teach them how to work as a team instead of competing all the time against each other. We need to teach our children public etiquettes, how to be civil, how to be nice. Nigerians, we are too tensed. When I travel abroad and the person selling something for me is being nice and friendly, I had a shock. That's okay. So, those students, wait. I have an information for you people. Please just wait 2 minutes. And then, yeah, so like I said, public etiquette. How to just be civil, be respectful, be nice, with a smile in your face all the time. We need to teach our children to read wide. Let me tell you how I now found out why I'm different. I went to rough schools, so I'm rough, but you know my saving grace? My mother was a librarian. My father, a historian. Yeah, so, so the one you book came me. But guess what? I used to read what I liked. Like Miss Folake, you know, there's no type of novel I did not read. Even when you called some, I quote the author when I was backstage. You understand? Then I used to read a lot of newspapers. Because internet not did that time. So, and I used to start reading the newspaper from the back page. Then after that, I'll go to the arts page. I discovered my interest. So before I entered uni, I already knew what I wanted to become in life. I did not struggle, you know, to figure myself out because I discovered. So we should encourage our children to read wide and read with, you know, we need to program, structure it because the internet is crazy. It is information barrage. It will hit. So we need to channel it for them. Then, when you leave the small ones and enter secondary school, there's a practice that promotes shame in a very loud way. And we have been looking at it for years in broad daylight. And that is empowering students to discipline students. It is insane. We are crazy in this country. You have no idea. There is nothing normal about it that my child that I gave birth to, I will come to school and they will tell me that one student punished him, either by flogging or asking him to kneel down. How can you... the oldest child in secondary school is an average of 16 years. What does a 16-year-old know? Then you give that child power to discipline another child. There is nothing right about it. The senior students are meant to guide the junior ones. Oh, we've passed through this road before. This is that. Not that teachers will sit back and tell students that you can punish, you can flog. My years in secondary school, especially my early years, I was so abused, but I was so dumbfounded. I could not wrap my head around the fact that, so because you are 1 year ahead of me, you will just tell me, kneel down. So those of you who wanted to go, you can go now. But this is my direct message to you. This is my direct message to you. Do not punish your schoolmates. They are your schoolmates. Do you understand? It is this abuse. That is where the abuse is created from. That is where the shame starts from. Because a student is given authority over SS3 can punish SS2 to JS1. SS2 can punish SS1 to JS1. And like that, and so on and so on. When these students graduate from secondary school and enter university, they are looking for that power. So the bully goes and he joins a confraternity, right? And the ones who were bullied and could not bully looks and says, man, I can't be open like this because now you are not even wearing uniform. Your own mates, they won't bully you. So he too joins a confraternity. Then they graduate from university and enter the society and everybody's looking for how to maximize their power. Are you understanding?
I don't know if public schools still do it, but you see this idea of waiting till SS3 before you wear trouser. Because in our time, it was a thing of bragging that a senior student, you're on trouser. Fabric. SS2, they're not born you well that you are in SS2 or any other lower class, then you wear trouser. This is part of the problems. You get what I'm saying? So yes, it should be abolished completely. Students punishing students, that is. You know, students punishing students. Finally, I've brought light to this thing. I will round up with this. I've brought light to it, the criticisms and all. It's good to criticize the system. If you follow my shows, you realize what I'm doing is I'm basically shining the spotlight of what is happening in everyday life. You know, lampooning the system. But you see visa on arrival. Now that one shocked me past. You know why? When I made visa on arrival, I wrote it, I thought about it. I said, you know what, let's give this thing life. So, you know, Accelerate TV was like, yeah, you create this show for us. I said, sure, why not? I created a show for them. I was thinking it will now make those in civil service feel bad. That, is this how we do? When they see me, they say, you! And today we must suffer you. The people you are suffering, and we will do you back today. I say, hey? So I created a character to now checkmate all the visa officers in visa on arrival. Right? When I started to study the comments on YouTube, majority of people don't like her. They say she despoil show for them. I was shocked that, so they say she despoil show. Are you seeing how we are thinking? These people watching this for entertainment value now. She's stopping people from taking bribe, stopping people from not taking their work serious and all that. But majority of the comments are like, fine girl, we like her. But she despoil show. This girl has come to spoil the show. Okay. So then I now realize that just criticizing, when you keep telling people this is what you are doing wrong, this is what, you force them into defensive mode. You know? So what I did is I now created another character. So we criticize, then we now show how it should be done. So that character, she's crazy. She's crazy, she insults, she embodies her colleagues. But guess what? She does her job. So she will tell your character, she will tell the person she's acting with that, you think I have your time, you think you are a fine girl. This is and the character will be like, I know you will deny the visa. That's what you people do here. We'll go to Abuja. It's like, me, deny you. You are qualified for the visa. Take your visa, carry and go. Because that's my way of letting the system know that you can misbehave. Like Miss Folake and one of her staff said, the guy not a great time. No problem, but he was doing his job. I think I'm done. Thank you.